I'm Amelia Mulla Schmidt, and you're listening to In Conversation with Radio Laurier. On May 25th, a Minneapolis police officer put his knee on the neck of a Black man for the alleged use of attempting to use a counterfeit bill. For 8 minutes and 46 seconds, this man lay on the ground while the officer murdering him and the surrounding ones did nothing, even as he cried out for help. That man's name was George Floyd, murdered by a Minneapolis police officer, another senseless and racist act of police brutality. Since May 25th, the world has seen its biggest civil rights moment in history. Globally, people have marched in support of Black Lives Matter and have actively been calling for the defunding and abolishment of police forces. Of course, what has been happening south of the border is nothing we haven't seen here in Canada. Discussions about anti-BIPOC racism and police brutality are actively happening here and amongst students on university campuses. Last week, we sat down with three BIPOC students, recent graduates from two Canadian institutions, the University of Ottawa and Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo, to discuss the atmosphere of inclusion and equity on their campuses and acts of racism that they have faced throughout their time on campus. These are their stories. Jaden, thank you for sitting down with us today and discussing your experiences. How are you today?
I'm very good, Amelia. Thank you for having me today.
So can you tell us a bit about yourself, your age, and your recent program of study and the institution you studied at?
Of course. So I am 23 years old and I'm a recent University of Ottawa graduate. I graduated with an honors bachelor of social sciences in political science and criminology. And this has proven to be really useful in discussing a lot of what's going on right now, addressing systemic racial inequalities in the justice system, but also in educational institutions.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure. Now, can you tell us a bit about your experience as a student at U of Ottawa, just in general, over the course of your 4 years?
Sure. So just even to give some more background, first of all, I'm a mixed race woman. So my mom's immigrated from India. I'm half Indian and then a quarter African-American and a quarter British. So even as a visible minority, it wasn't actually until my second year of university that I finally found the academic terms to fit the racism that I was experiencing and witnessing, such as microaggressions, systemic barriers, and problems within education, but also justice systems. So in terms of my personal experiences at the University of Ottawa, I would say I mostly experienced microaggressions, but also I was witness to racist comments because nobody really knows what I am as a mixed person. So it's kind of like that feeling of being comfortable and able to talk about certain things just because you don't know where I was from. So examples of this are the use of the N-word around me by non-Black people. That happened quite frequently on campus, and I think part of it is just justifying it through song lyrics or saying that you have like Black friends and things like that. And then another instance where I was present was an ex-friend of mine who was talking ill of immigrants and saying very radical kind of rhetoric about this. Again, just not cluing into the fact that who you're talking to, that might have a direct impact on them. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. I also found that at the University of Ottawa, there's a lot of people that came there from smaller towns. So it was their first experience meeting someone like me. I'm originally from Vaughan, which is close to Toronto. So just there's more diversity I find out here than when I went to Ottawa. And there's just this notion of fixating on or pinning down an identity I find that relates directly to microaggressions. So comments like, I thought you were Black because of your hair, or I don't mean to be offensive, but what are you? Wow, great tan, you must have just come back from somewhere. Which this is just my natural skin tone. Like, you know, these are comments I'm getting in the winter when I'm at my palest. Other comments such as you're pretty, I would have never guessed you're half Indian. So again, that assumption that, you know, that basically is saying that Indian people aren't good looking or something like that. It's just this Eurocentric norm of beauty that they're applying in that microaggression. Mm-hmm. Other comments such as, is that your real hair? Where are you from? Like, no, but where are you really from? When they're dissatisfied with an answer, like, you know, from Toronto, it's like, but what's your background? So find comments like that really fixate or pin down identity. And then I kind of just have categorized these different microaggressions as well. There's also like the fetishization and hypersexualization of racialized people, mm-hmm. which I partly experienced. So these are comments such as, you're so exotic, like that's like a really big turn on for me. Like that concept right there is very problematic. Mm-hmm. There was also somebody that I was dating from U of O at the time, who made a comment prior to getting intimate, and he was like, I've never been with a black girl before, so take it easy with me. I hear that you girls are freaks. So it's again this like hypersexualization of racialized people, and that assumption that comes from, you know, it's partly to blame media and the portrayals of racialized people, especially black women. Mm-hmm. And just that kind of dual thing too of, you know, other comments about being light skin and what that means and the implications even within the black community, the colorism that exists there. Yes. With like, you know, you think you're better than everybody else or being light skin and comments like that. And then I'd say my final kind of categorization of microaggressions that I experienced were based on comfort caused by straying outside society's norm or status quo. Mm-hmm. So comments like, what are you doing with the white boy? Comments about my relationships, and also like, you should probably date your own kind. I've heard that before from strangers. So again, it's like, what does that even mean? I'm mixed, so what is your own kind? And it's just problematic to hear those kinds of comments from people you don't even know, but these are things happening on campus or just around the area. So as I said, my individual and personal experiences have primarily been with microaggressions at the University of Ottawa. Mm-hmm. This isn't to say that there aren't greater systemic issues of racism within the institution, though. Mm-hmm. And to speak to this, I think we need to talk more about like the culture of the U of O.
Right. And I'm just wondering if you can maybe explain a little bit the difference between microaggressions and racism, because I think it's quite easy to think they're very similar from what you're saying.
So microaggressions kind of, they fall under, I guess, so questions, but I think the problem is a lot of people will say these microaggressions as a compliment in some cases. So like, you know, when you say you're pretty, I never would have guessed you're Indian. Like, it's like, what's wrong with that? But it's microaggressions really are these comments that are based on stereotypical views of race. Mm-hmm. And rather, you know, so it's just, I think that's more of the difference versus like actual blatant racist comments, like use of the N-word or derogatory terms. That's more of an attack, I guess you would expect, but microaggressions are much, much more covert comments that for me personally, when I heard them before I even knew the term, I would kind of go home and be upset about it and not understand why, like, it was bothering me until I realized, like, these are still racist comments. It's just the person saying it might not have realized they were being racist and saying it, and it's still having an impact and affecting people every day when they're hearing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that's really come out of this movement and what's going on is kind of understanding a microaggressions, but that it's slander, but put in a nicer way. But at the same time, it's very problematic.
Exactly.
And I think calling people out and just emphasizing the damage that saying these things can do, like what you've experienced, is super important right now in kind of correcting the environment that's been created, especially within institutions of higher education.
100%.
So I just want to talk a little bit about the culture within University of Ottawa. When it comes to diversity and inclusion, what can you say about that?
I do think that there is a diversity issue at the University of Ottawa. In terms of like the student body, I'd say it's diverse enough, but specifically in regards to like staffing and as you move higher up the chain, like it's the comment of like when you move higher up the chain, it gets older and whiter. And I do think that applies to the University of Ottawa. There's a lack of representation amongst professors. I can speak only for the social sciences because that was my program, but you know, I was taught Indigenous politics by a white professor, and I think that's a problem because I want to be hearing about these things from people who have experienced it and can actually speak to it. I don't want to hear the narrative told from someone else's perspective. There's only 2 full-time professors in criminology who are not white at the University of Ottawa, and that's a problem too because criminology, the approach that the University of Ottawa takes in regards to crim, is a really big focus on being intersectional in that approach and understanding policing, and has highlighted issues within the criminal justice system and the racism that's present there. And yet this institution doesn't have enough black profs talking about this or enough, you know, colored profs speaking on this. So I think that's definitely an issue. Mm-hmm. And in terms of diversity. So yeah, those are the main issues that I've seen in terms of just the teaching.
It's interesting that you mention the lack of professors of the lack of Black professors. In our interview earlier today, the same remark was made about Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo. So I think this is a pattern that people are starting to recognize and see, and hopefully this will bring about some change, the fact that there's kind of the disruption and just accepting this as just the way it is. So I'm hopeful with that too, that this will bring about universities bringing on more full-time BIPOC professors. Because like you said, you should be taught Indigenous studies by an Indigenous professor, because that's their lived experience.
Definitely. And even more so than the professors themselves, I think there's some sort of systemic racism when it comes to just kind of quieting issues at the university when, you know, students are trying to make noise. You should be supporting their voices. Like, we've got like our Black Students Association at the University of Ottawa that was very adamantly fighting for justice in a case, several cases on campus that took place with carding different Black students. One of the cases, I think, was from June of 2019. A student was asked for his identification from a campus security, and when he said he didn't have it on him, he was handcuffed on campus for 2 hours. Wow. So they actually had an internalist investigation and human rights investigation that found that the reason was racially motivated. And the articles that you read about this case is that this kid was detained for skateboarding while being Black. So cases like that where the university tried to cover it up, it just goes to show that silence is compliance, mm-hmm. and it's being complicit in these instances of racism, mm-hmm. as opposed to speaking out and declaring that these are wrong, like what's happening. So I think that contributes to the systemic racism within the institution when you're trying to cover it up rather than address it.
Mm-hmm. Again, same thing I think can be said about a lot of students' experiences at Laurier too. It's the lack of response and the silence that you've mentioned that people are getting really angry and frustrated about. Because like you said, silence is compliance in this sense. And when nothing's said by the institutions, how can these students who are actively being racist in the community, in the institution, correct their behavior?
100%. Yeah, they're not going to. It's being reinforced, if anything, and just it's being allowed by the institution in those cases, mm-hmm. until the media or social media picks up on it, which is what we're seeing with so many of these cases now. Social media has kind of been the big driver behind this, and young mm-hmm. people have the power with social media to bring these issues to light. So I think there was a lot of push, and this made it to mainstream media, and then that looks really bad for the institution. And they get involved, but it's like what you're saying, they're getting involved for the wrong reason, as mm-hmm. opposed to just addressing it at the source.
Absolutely. Now, I just want to quickly shift to student life on university campuses, especially when it comes to culture. Mm-hmm. Students are often very quick to adopt Black music, dances, and fashion, especially amongst party life at universities, but are often silent when it comes to Black issues. Has this been something that you've seen in your university experience?
I've seen this a lot, and that's why one of the more powerful kind of posts that was circulating in the beginning with the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement mm-hmm. said, love Black people like you love Black culture. And I've really clung to that one because I feel like that's something that I've been seeing a lot before, you know, George Floyd and all of this going on. Like you said, there's so much value on Black culture and wanting to act Black, if you will. And I find the big one a representation of this is using the n-word, mm-hmm. so you know, with friendships even, it's just like you're out, you're dancing, or you're in the car on the way out to go partying or whatever, and a song comes on, and then somebody who is non-Black says the n-word along with the song. And so in those instances, I stop the person and say, like, you can't say that, you've got no right to that word. I explain like the history, and for me, like, the big thing is that word is the last thing that a Black person might have heard before being lynched, like being called that word. I personally don't believe in the power of kind of reclaiming these derogatory terms. I respect if the Black community kind of wants to use them amongst themselves, but I think it does create a problem though when, you know, you've got non-Black people wanting to adopt Black culture and feeling like they're entitled to using those words as well. That's a really, really big issue. Mm-hmm. So I think I've had arguments with people. One example I can remember is a party at my apartment last year Somebody had been using the N-word just in their speech, and they were not black. So I told them to stop. And he's like, it's fine. I have black friends. It's not a big deal. I can say it if I want to. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that can't be said around me. Like, you need to get out of my apartment. Like, I don't agree with that. You have no right to that word. You don't understand. And so kick that person out. I've got no problems ending friendships over this. Like, this is a really big issue. And I really strongly feel that that's one of the worst words in history that can be used, like one of the worst derogatory terms. So I find it interesting, people like this that I've had conversations with about the N-word have been very, very quiet with all of the Black Lives Matter movement going on right now. So it's like, if people fought harder for Black rights, you know, and their rights to life, liberty, and security, equality, as hard as they fought to be cool and say the N-word, I think we would see more rapid change.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I agree completely. And just in general, wrapping it up here with the University of Ottawa, within the institution, within the culture, within student life, what are some things that you think will be critical in implementing changes within your former institution towards more racial equality?
I think a good resource for this would be, so the Truth and Reconciliation Commission came up with calls to action, and this was just to increase their representation in dealing with Indigenous lives, policing Indigenous lives, and also just in the criminal justice system. But I think a lot of these points can be taken and applied more broadly to people of color in the Black community. Mm-hmm. One of the recommendations has to do with increasing representation. So as we were talking about with professors at the institution, the administration, like even, you know, mental health services, like you need people that look like you and more diversity in there to feel comfortable to go in and talk and feel like you're being represented. And also to know that you're getting told the right side of a story, you know, like we're saying, like teaching Indigenous politics should come from those who have lived those experiences. Mm-hmm. So I think hiring practices need to change, because that's obviously an issue and perhaps a systemic barrier to professors that are, you know, Black or a person of color or Indigenous becoming full-time professors at the institution. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big thing. And just again, amplifying Black voices and voices of people of color who have lived this experience. So giving a bigger platform to student associations, Black Lives Matter, and, you know, Black student associations to talk about these lived experiences and make it kind of part of a continuing and open dialogue, so that people that are saying things that are racist or, you know, can check themselves and realize that, hey, like that's a microaggression. What I'm saying could actually be hurting someone or offending someone and is actually contributing to racism. Mm-hmm. So it's just really keeping that dialogue going and educating people more.
I think that's a great point to end off on, is just the importance of education in the sense, because like you said, when you were talking about microaggressions, a lot of the time people may not be aware of what they're saying and the implications of that. And that's not to excuse it whatsoever. But if there was more equitable education, I believe on university campuses, we would see a reduced amount of these experiences for BIPOC students.
Definitely agree with you.
Jaden, thank you so much for your time and for being willing to share your experiences.
Thank you for having me and for continuing to have this discussion on race. I think it's really important just to keep the dialogue going. So I appreciate you for having me and talking to me about this today.
Thank you so much, Jaden. Take care.
You as well.
Good morning, Dante. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for being willing to share your experiences.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, and it's my pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, your age and program at university, and a bit about your life as a student at Laurier.
So I'm 22 years old. Just recently graduated with a political science degree from Wilfrid Laurier. Fortunate enough to be a student athlete as well. I'm part of the men's soccer team. My experience at Wilfrid Laurier was one that was quite great. I felt like I picked Wilfrid Laurier due to the diverse community. I felt like there was a lot of outlets, a lot of places that you could go especially with the different types of groups, organizations around campus that were willing to hear you out, ideas, events that you wanted to put on. Mm-hmm. And it was a great place to thrive in.
Mm-hmm. So overall, it sounds like it was a pretty positive experience.
Pretty positive.
But of course, I'm sure there were some negative things that you experienced. And can you tell us a little bit about what your experiences have been with racism on the Laurier campus?
Yeah, I would say on campus, it was really good. It was more off of campus, mm-hmm. I would say, in the light of like you going to a bar or a place where mm-hmm. you were not supposed to be, if that makes any sense, because mm-hmm. I feel like it was categorized that if you were a person of color, you would be at Phil's on Wednesday,
yeah.
or you would might be at pub on Tuesday, mm-hmm. or something Friday, Saturday. But if you're at Dallas on a Friday, it was kind of like sometimes you get that odd stare.
Exclusionary.
Exactly.
So I guess maybe not as much within the institution your experiences were kind of felt, but it's essentially in the culture of the people is what you're
exactly.
saying.
Exactly. And that's, I think that's where it stems from, right?
Mm-hmm. But do you believe that the institution kind of plays a role in creating that culture, that exclusionary culture?
I feel like there's some work that could be done on their side as well, because mm-hmm. I feel like there's always work that can be done. For instance, I'll bring up a story that was quite interesting for myself. I was a part of a North American Studies class. This is my third year of university. Mm-hmm. We were talking about Black Canadians, mm-hmm. and they brought up a city in Nova Scotia called Africville. I'm 21 at this time. It's the first time I'm ever hearing about this exclusion of mm-hmm. Black Canadians in Nova Scotia mm-hmm. at 21 years old. And in my head, mm-hmm. I was just like, it's crazy to me that I had to dig so deep just mm-hmm. to find a bit of history about people who relate to me on like another level. And mm-hmm. I feel like if this was known to everyone, and like there's obviously more to the history and to the story, mm-hmm. it could change people's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But that is obviously not being done to a high degree.
Right. So you're saying, like, I feel like a lot of the conversation that's been happening in Canada right now has been kind of with the attitude that that doesn't happen here.
And exactly.
So you're saying essentially that if there was more education put in place, maybe it would be easier for people to understand.
Exactly. Like, for instance, another story, my friend, obviously it's different, but he goes to school in the States,
mm-hmm.
and he's a Spanish minority, and he took his a course on Black studies.
Mm-hmm.
And Emilia, like when he came back, he was educating me
yeah.
on stuff about not only African-Americans, African-Canadians.
Wow.
And like, to me, I felt, wow, that's crazy that I'm not offered that and like that around me. I would have to go digging for that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like in life, sometimes some stuff you have to go finding and searching, right. But I don't think it should be to that degree.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I completely agree with that. And I think a lot of the response from Laurier students has been that there is a lack of formal education coming from the institutional level. So I think like responses like this are exactly what people are hearing and saying. And hopefully with that, change will come about. And there will be more like Canadian focused studies, because like we've said, I think there's a lot of focus on the States a lot of the time, which can be problematic because we ignore the Canadian context.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Now, 100%. I just want to quickly turn back to athletics, because you are a varsity athlete.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen much of the discourse amongst Black college athletes in Canada and the U.S. about the racism they've faced on and off the field. Specifically mm-hmm. at Western, their football players have been actively speaking out against alumni who have threatened to pull donations if the university continues to support Black Lives Matter. Do you feel that this racism is prevalent amongst Laurier athletics at all?
I feel like it depends on a team's culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where it stems from.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, like I could speak for myself with soccer
mm-hmm.
that we've been with the racism isn't a thing, because it stems from our coach, the way he integrates us
mm-hmm.
and where he's accepting of us all. Where like you look at a team like football, for instance,
mm-hmm.
I like the Laurier football team to me looks like one big family. I don't know what happens within their team, their organization, but I feel like what it stems from is your team culture and what you build upon.
Mm-hmm. So your experience with soccer has been positive overall, you would say?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Now, also a lot of the discourse that's going on right now is pointing to the fact that typically Black athletes are praised for their athletic performance but aren't valued at the same capacity when it comes to their experience outside of sport. Can you speak on that at all, and what are your beliefs behind that?
No, yeah, it's a great topic. I honestly believe that if there is going to be change, it's mm-hmm. going to start with people like themselves, mm-hmm. Because they are getting paid for entertainment. Mm-hmm. And sports is something that not a lot of people can live without. Mm-hmm. And I think by what's going on within the athletic community in the United States, Canada, both the collegiate and professionally, mm-hmm. by players saying like they don't want to play, mm-hmm. that's an alarm for change. Like, you know, mm-hmm. people are going to recognize that they're serious because mm-hmm. they're like, here, I'm not going to perform it for you if we're not getting what we want. And they're lucky enough to have that platform for change. Mm-hmm. And obviously I don't think it's right, because it's like, you're only looking at these people in one dimension. Like mm-hmm. you don't care for what they went through or what they felt this whole entire time.
That's a great point.
I think that it's time for them to take the action of like, not only thinking about money. And like, what I mean by that, obviously I know money is an important aspect of life, mm-hmm. but if you can take a step back and just say, you know what, I don't want to play until we're making a change as a society mm-hmm. or as a team organization, I believe change will come. Mm-hmm. Because then, like, not to get too deep into it, the people higher up are not benefiting anymore.
No, you can keep going.
The people higher up aren't benefiting more. And I feel like that will, obviously, it's sad that it has come to that point mm-hmm. where people are going to have to stop doing their profession to make a change. Mm-hmm. But if we want change, and I believe the next generation is change, it's going to stem from stuff like this.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you bring up about leveraging the fact that, you know, threatening to not play is finally making specifically typically white audiences wake up and see that something needs to change.
Yeah, I think 100%.
Like you said, it's unfortunate that it needs to get to that point, but it's a good point that they can leverage that.
No, yeah, I agree. And I do think, though, like there will be change. Mm-hmm. I think, like, especially with the young generation, and I was thinking about touching upon this earlier mm-hmm. when I was thinking about the younger generation at Laurier, because when you were asking about my experience, I was like, for the most part, we are pretty, like, woke and pretty understanding, but understanding doesn't mean you're educated. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even myself, I can even be more educated.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where it's going to start. It's going to start from the households, mm-hmm. from stuff like that. And that's how we will defeat it together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's just what I believe. And mm-hmm. I think we're on the verge of that. And we need to take steps each and every day mm-hmm. to read books or to even watch movies.
Yeah.
That stuff that's not presented on social media.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you said you're feeling hopeful. What is giving you hope specifically about this change?
What's giving me hope is, I would say, so many different activities, initiatives, stuff that's getting started. Mm-hmm. For instance, I know even like with myself, I've been empowered to start my own initiative. And like, I just think it's a great time for people, Black Canadians, Black Americans, mm-hmm. and everybody to come together, mm-hmm. no matter your ethnicity or like any your culture or religion, mm-hmm. because if we're gonna defeat it, it's gonna be all together. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even like we said, it should have never came to this, mm-hmm. but even in my daily life, I see people willing to listen to me more or talk to me more.
Right.
And like I said, it should have never came to this, mm-hmm. but now we have somewhat control of the situation. Mm-hmm. So it's, where do we go from here?
Right. Now, you're saying people are listening to you more now. Do you find that frustrating? Because these aren't new issues, right?
These are not new issues. They happen every day. Mm-hmm. They happened every day last year, and you can see what's going on in the States, and it's nothing new. Mm-hmm. But Honestly, Amelia, it was frustrating at the beginning. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, it was really frustrating. Frustrating to the point where I didn't know how to cope with my emotions, so I had to step away from everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like you said, it's something that happens every day. And the fact that, is it, like, I know people have asked this question, is it COVID? Is mm-hmm. it, do you care of what I'm going through because of COVID?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have nothing to do and we're all in lockdown?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it actually something mm-hmm. that we're willing to change together?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the question I want people to ask themselves.
Right.
Because I just feel, yeah, I came at this time,
mm-hmm.
but what happens after this time? When we don't have enough time to sit down for a Zoom call, or we don't have enough time to do anything in our daily lives. So, you know, that's where I want to ask people to really look into themselves.
Right. And I think that's a lot of the, sorry, go ahead.
Continue. No, continue.
No, I was going to say, I think there's a lot of the momentum behind this movement right now is the fact that this needs to go past when the new cycle is finished with it. This needs mm-hmm. to stay relevant because it's happened so many times. Like, Black Lives Matter is not new. That these have been, this has been happening, and we just forget about it because life gets too busy. And I think, like, just COVID has exposed so many things about racial inequality, economic inequality, that is, it's brought it all to the forefront and solidified things for people, when, even though they should have been solidified a long time ago, but now it's almost impossible to ignore. What do you think about that?
I agree. I do think it's impossible to ignore it. For instance, Brenton Hall's dad, Wes Hall, I have no personal connection to Brenton Hall, but
mm-hmm.
I know he played for the Laurier men's soccer football team,
mm-hmm.
and his dad just started an initiative. I think it's Black the North or North the Black or something like that.
Right.
He was a high corporate manager up on Bay Street
mm-hmm.
who is ready and to make a change. Let his voice be heard. And, like, if that can stem from someone so high up,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like, there is going to be change. Like, mm-hmm. there is going to be change. That energy that he's reciprocating so high up
mm-hmm.
is just going to boil down. Because mm-hmm. what starts from the top will boil down.
Mm-hmm.
And something like that is what I believe will create change in all aspects of life. But I do agree it starts all back to what we started with, which mm-hmm. is education.
Yeah.
It's how do we integrate this education into not only our high school system, university system, or even elementary school system.
Right.
How do we incorporate this education at home?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's what it comes to, because it's like you can go to school and learn something in elementary school,
mm-hmm.
but if you go back home and your parents tell you it's irrelevant,
mm-hmm.
and you go to school tomorrow, you're not going to want to learn about that, or you're not going to be interested in on that topic.
Absolutely.
So I think when we go back to all this, like we've been saying, it stems from home.
Yeah, I agree completely. Now, I just want to go back to Laurier quickly.
No worries.
Now, in order for change to occur, like relevant change, important change, to kind of shift the culture at Laurier to a more equitable one, what do you think are the most critical changes that need to occur? I know you've touched on education and...
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, firstly, it would be probably education. Second, I think... Like I've said, you've been doing a great job. So with this platform,
mm-hmm.
With getting other people with higher up within the institution to tell their stories, explain
mm-hmm.
their stories, what they've been through,
mm-hmm.
whether that be at Laurier or even to get to Laurier.
Because
mm-hmm. I know, like, even half the people I know at Laurier who are of Black descent, it's been a struggle to even get to Laurier.
Absolutely.
And sometimes in life, it's like you appreciate the process more than actually getting this, like, what you got, like, after getting the degree or whatever you have gotten.
Yeah.
And I think we have to look at that process to get there. And when someone compares that to themselves,
mm-hmm.
they will realize what privilege is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, and I feel like it's something that we should account for. For instance, like, I remember my captain for 3 years was working two or three jobs at school and playing games. He'd be finished work at like 6 a.m. We have a game at 9 a.m. He's on the field.
Wow.
And I'm just saying something like that is, I know it's something little,
mm-hmm.
but that privilege that, oh, I get to go to bed. Oh, I could go out at night and go to bed and wake mm-hmm. up and then go to class.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of someone's like schedule that's like all over the place.
Right.
Those little things can be taken into perspective.
Yeah.
Along with that, I think there should be more Black profs.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that they have a story as well,
mm-hmm.
and they're a part of the story and a part of this journey to where we're gonna overcome this.
Yeah,
and I think they have a voice that could be heard as well,
mm-hmm.
and also an impact that can be played not only on all students, all of the Laurier body. Because when you see someone in a position of power, you just gain a certain respect for that person. And now they have that platform.
Right.
And that's what we limit, that platform.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think those are some great points. And I like the point about your captain who worked three jobs. And I think, again, that kind of stems down to the culture within Laurier, because I think prior to us being students there, it was a predominantly white school institution. So I think that lingers there, that misunderstanding of how difficult it is for some people to get here. I think that's, if we focused more on those stories, there would be a lot more understanding, because not everybody gets here because, you know, their parents were able to finance their education. Like you said, there are people who work three jobs and don't have the privilege of going out to chainsaw with their friends. Rip chainsaw. And I think those stories are worth acknowledging, but I also totally agree that there should be more professors of color to represent the diverse and growing student body at Laurier.
Yeah, I agree. And I think those are three things that the school should probably reflect on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this podcast is on the way of doing it, because I do think podcasts are the future of
mm-hmm.
everything, and I will stand by that. And it's just a way to inform people
mm-hmm.
when they don't want to be informed, or when they do, but also when they don't want to be informed.
Absolutely. And I think so much of this is about dealing with really ugly truths that we don't want to necessarily acknowledge, but time's up.
Yep. I 100% agree. And like we've been saying this whole time, it's time to educate yourself.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Dante, I just want to thank you so much for your time and for being willing to share your experiences. I'm sure this isn't an easy process to confront all these things, but I just want to thank you very, very much.
My pleasure, Amelia. And anything I could do to help with the Laurier student body, I'm there as a proud alum. And I just want to see us prosper and overcome this.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All the best.
Take care. Bye-bye. Sedalia, thank you for sitting down with us today and discussing your experiences. How are you?
I'm good today. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So can you tell us a bit about yourself, your age, your recent program of study, and the institution that you graduated from?
So I am 22 years old. I graduated from Communication Studies from Wilfrid Laurier University this year, 2020.
Wow.
And yeah.
Congratulations. Another comm grad here.
Thank you.
And I just want to briefly discuss the culture at Laurier as an institution as a whole when it comes to the equity and inclusion of BIPOC students.
I feel like there definitely is a lot of diversity on campus. However, I feel not a lot of students feel that sense of inclusion, especially BIPOC students, I would say.
Mm-hmm. How so? Like, what about it do you think, if you could pinpoint down a couple things, what about it is kind of refraining from that full inclusion?
I feel like even in classroom settings, it's a little bit harder to talk to some people and communicate, or even just to be friendly with other people on campus. I feel like it's not portrayed as positively as a non-BIPOC student, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what have been your experiences with racism and racial inequality on the Laurier campus and as a student in general?
So as a student in general, I haven't necessarily faced any racism on the Laurier campus. However, I did when I went on exchange through the Laurier exchange program. Mm-hmm. During my travels in Germany, I did face a bit of racism there.
Mm-hmm. And what exactly did you deal with when you were in Germany abroad?
I dealt with a group of individuals who were mocking me and one of the other Black girls that were in the room.
Oh, wow.
And they were just kind of just making a mockery of us, shouting at us, yelling at us, kind of just trying to get our attention and rile us on.
Wow. And how did that feel?
It definitely was hurtful. It was a troubling experience for sure. I didn't really know how to comprehend what was going on exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot more difficult because of the two people that I was with. They weren't BIPOC, so I didn't think they were able to really comprehend what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of just, I don't know, I felt really, I felt really unwanted to be in that space.
Right. And did you say that like the two people that you were with, they were not BIPOC, they didn't step in or like understand the discomfort that you and your other friend were feeling?
I think they had some sense of like they knew what was going on, but I think they just didn't feel the need to step in. They kind of just told me to ignore it, get over it, which honestly was a little bit more frustrating in my opinion.
Yeah.
I
can see that. And I think that ties into the whole, maybe the movement that's going on right now with like silence is compliance.
So for sure.
I think that's what you're describing is a prime example of that over a year ago.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Now I know discussing with you earlier, you were talking about how yourself and a fellow varsity athlete started a Black History Month celebration a year or so back. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so me and one of the football guys, his name's Osai, we did a little Black History Month event going on through Lori Letterman,
mm-hmm.
which is just like a club or an organization, I would say, for the varsity athletes. And we participate in a bunch of different, trying to find the word.
No worries.
Different events throughout the city of Kitchener-Waterloo as well as on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So during this Black History Month event, we kind of just had speakers, BIPOC, well, Black specifically, that came in. They were kind of just speaking about their experiences with racism as well as how they were able to get to their point in their lives now,
mm-hmm.
with everything that they went through and how it made them a stronger person and just a bunch of really interesting stories.
Mm-hmm. And that was put on entirely by the two of you.
Yeah, with the help of Lori Letterman that funded the event. But mm-hmm. yeah, we were the ones who pretty much did a bunch of the research. We did a lot of the marketing for it. Yeah.
And what was the reason that you guys started this off?
Well, he had actually reached out to me through Instagram. I honestly didn't even think that we would be able to throw this kind of event because I don't think it's ever happened through Letterman before.
Mm-hmm.
So he reached out to me. He said he was speaking to one of the head directors of Letterman and they were trying to see if they can put on an event.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of just came up with the idea of having alum that came in.
Mm-hmm.
to just come and sit and talk with the rest of the group. A bunch of the people in the crowd, you know, they were sharing their own experiences as well. So it was really eye-opening.
Interesting. And what were the results? Like, what was the turnout for this event?
Unfortunately, it wasn't the biggest turnout, but I think that also just has to do with the lack of, I don't want to say lack of marketing on our part, because I think we did as much as we possibly could. You know, we're just two people, and we also had the help of Letterman's Instagram as well to market it.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like, we didn't really have any emphasis of the event through like Laurier as a whole. So it was a good turnout in a sense. I think we had a really good crowd. We had great conversations, mm-hmm. but I definitely think we could have had more, especially non-BIPOC people there.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you ever reach out to the school to ask for support for this event?
Honestly, I didn't, mm-hmm. which I think may have been a mistake on my part. Mm-hmm. But I think it was just because we kind of just felt like we probably wouldn't be able to get any recognition anyways, because mm-hmm. just like through past experience, I feel like Laurier has never really put a lot of acknowledgement into many of the clubs and associations that are centered around BIPOC students or even other cultures that we have those associations for.
Yeah.
So we just thought there wouldn't really be any point in trying.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think the fact that you guys didn't reach out speaks volumes about how you perceive the institution when it comes to valuing, you know, BIPOC students and just an array of different experiences on the Laurier campus amongst their students.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, this sounds like a great event. Did it continue the year after, or?
It didn't continue. So this was last February. It didn't continue this year. I wasn't on Letterman because I had gone on exchange, so I wasn't able to be an athlete anymore this year. Mm-hmm. But it didn't continue, which was kind of unfortunate to see. Mm-hmm. I was going to reach out to them, but I kind of just thought, you know, I'm not a part of it anymore. If they want to keep on with the tradition, you know, it's completely up to them.
Yeah.
I know there were some, I think a couple of BIPOC or even Black athletes that were on Letterman this year. So I thought maybe they would have continued it, but I didn't really see any acknowledgement of the event. So I think it was kind of just a 1 year only kind of thing.
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it really is.
Now, when it comes to Laurier as an institution, when it comes to like specifically what you're talking about and what you and Osayu were trying to emphasize, Black History Month, such an important month, the month of February. What are they doing, and are they doing enough as an institution to promote the awareness and celebration?
I do not think they're doing enough. I don't think they're honestly doing anything at all, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember a couple of weeks ago when the entire George Floyd incident had just occurred, and Laurier actually posted on their Instagram story kind of maybe one story about what was going on, and I don't even think it was talking about it specifically. It was kind of just like, maybe it was for Blackout Tuesday, I don't even remember. That's how like insignificant it was to me.
Yeah.
But then the other posts were all about Pride, which mm-hmm. honestly, I love Pride just as much as the next person,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like there should definitely be a diversity of information that you're sharing, because not everyone has their own sense of identity.
Yeah.
And with Black people, I think it should definitely be recognized throughout our institution a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I completely agree. And I think so much, like you were talking about the different students associations, we have the Black Students Association, so much of the anger, and I'm sure the feeling of like a lack of acknowledgement comes from, there's been numerous events at Laurier over the past few years. There's even the incident of the white woman in the nightclub saying the N-word repeatedly, and the university didn't take a stance.
Yep.
Like, how did that make you feel?
That was, honestly, it was so infuriating.
Yeah.
Because it just shows the lack of sincerity or even just acknowledgement towards the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it was posted on their popular Twitter page, which everyone knows about and everyone follows, it's very heartbreaking to know that even with that much publicity on the issue, they didn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was almost like, because it didn't happen on campus, it was non-guilty by association, you know what I mean?
Which I don't think is fair.
Oh, because absolutely not.
A lot of issues that do occur outside of campus that, honestly, it wouldn't even be a white person. Like, it could be a BIPOC person. They would definitely they would definitely do something about it.
No, I agree. And I think even though it's not happening on campus, clearly there's issues if with the culture within the institution, if this is what we're seeing happen with the students that attend our school.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, just wrapping it up, one final question for you. What do you think the institution, Laurier, needs to do at its highest level to increase equality and rid itself of anti-Black racism and racism towards BIPOC students?
Honestly, there is so much that needs to be done through Laurier and all institutions as well. I'm not knocking Laurier specifically. You know, I spent my last 4 years of my undergrad there, so I have nothing but love, but I think we definitely need to place more recognition on our BIPOC students mm-hmm. and help them feel that sense of diversity that Laurier emphasizes so much, you know, throughout their student brochures and just like encouraging students to come to Laurier mm-hmm. because we're such a diverse campus. Yes, we are completely 100%, but we need to start portraying that diversity and also letting the students at Laurier feel that they're as included as non-BIPOC students.
I completely agree, and I think those are some great sentiments to wrap up with. So Sedalia, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being willing to share your experiences, and I wish you nothing but the best, and congratulations on your recent graduation.
Thank you. You too.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
In 2019, a study was published by a team of local researchers that looked at and evaluated the experiences of racialized students, staff, and faculty at Wilfrid Laurier University's Brantford, Waterloo, and Kitchener campuses. Their study is called Being Raced. The study reported that 53.3% of participants are unsure or disagree that Wilfrid Laurier universities would handle reported cases of racism appropriately. And 53% are unsure or disagree that Wilfrid Laurier University is committed to confronting and ending racism. The experiences of BIPOC students that we heard today, coupled with the data from the study, highlight the changes that must occur to create an inclusive and equitable space for students of all backgrounds to live and learn in. We all have a responsibility to keep this dialogue going, to listen to the stories and experiences of BIPOC students, and to hold our academic institutions accountable for dealing with racism on our campuses. I'm Amelia Muller-Schmidt, and this was this week's episode of In Conversation with Radio Laurier. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.